We're told we live in the nuclear era. 65 years ago today, a mushroom cloud rose from a detonation of a uranium bomb over the city of Hiroshima, Japan, an attack ordered by a then unelected President Harry Truman, who'd been on the job less than 4 months and changed the world forever.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base. That was because we wished in the first attack to avoid, in so far as possible, the killing of civilians.
More than 140,000 mostly civilians died as a result of the Hiroshima bomb, and 3 days later the U.S. dropped a second, this time a plutonium bomb, on Nagasaki, killing an additional 70,000 people. Everyone on the planet is a witness to the nuclear age, but very few people are actual witnesses to history's only two nuclear attacks, and there are fewer survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki with each passing year. Joining us now is Academy Award-winning filmmaker Stephen Okazaki, who has made two films about Japan's nuclear survivors, The Mushroom Club and White Light, Black Rain. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Have you found, Stephen, that, you know, in your encounters with, you know, Japanese culture and the people who are survivors, and also all of the people who have been touched by these attacks, that the bomb, in a certain sense, has reached back to the United States through the curious connection between Japanese popular culture and the kinds of images that we find attractive here in the United States about both the bomb and what's evil and sort of hidden things lurking behind the faces of monsters?
Well, I think, you know, the bomb has had a really profound impact on Japanese culture. I think that Godzilla, who, you know, was created supposedly as a mutation from nuclear weapons, Astro Boy, who was the most popular cartoon in Japan after the war, is nuclear-powered. And, you know, Japanese animation and comic books and video games have found their way here and sort of had a huge effect on and influence on American culture. And some of these are images that have, you know, inspired by Hiroshima. I doubt that the kids playing these games like Resident Evil or Final Fantasy are thinking about that. But, you know, because Hiroshima and Nagasaki are a huge influence on popular culture in Japan, and Japanese toys and, you know, are obviously a big big influence on popular culture here.
You know, this is kind of a strange question, but for all of the brutality and the political debating that goes on about the use of nuclear weapons at the end of World War II against Japan and the civilian deaths, and we don't need to talk about that here, I'm wondering if through your work that the attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki constitute, after all the politics and brutality is set aside for a moment, if you can even do that, some kind of covenant between Japan and the United States, that we are linked in some way for all time in a relationship that is unique to the world.
I've never thought about that. That's really interesting. I think the two countries are connected because of the bombing, but perhaps because of it as well, they can't quite look at each other in the eye and sort of have the conversation they need to have. I think that there's also, you know, that there's also so many sort of unspoken parts to it. I mean, it's very interesting, and I think that Americans have a sort of knee-jerk reaction to the bombing, to immediately start talking about the political decision to drop the bomb, as opposed to the reality of the human toll and the devastating effects of radiation. You know, even 60 years later, people are still dying and suffering from radiation-related diseases there. And
so in a very real way, it seems to me, and the people that you've interviewed, the impact of the atomic bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki is still being felt, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think for the people that experience it, it's with them every day. I think it wasn't, you know, really just recalling the moments from memory. It was, as soon as they start talking about it, it's being there again. And I mean, certainly for people who have told the story many times, you know, they've lost touch with it, I think, a bit. But we tried to look for people that hadn't talked about it too much, and for them, they were reliving that moment.
What would you say these witnesses carry with them in telling their stories about these nuclear attacks? And what do we lose as each one passes from the scene, do you think?
I think their stories are something that, for me, is the real connector. I mean, I think it's usually when in discussions about the bomb, we miss what really happened, what it felt like, if we're you and I. And in this film, you know, the people that are alive now, you know, were children or at best teenagers when it happened, and you get their perspective, and it happened when, you know, they were about to tie their shoes before they went to school, or just as they were arriving at school, or just as they were having breakfast. And to me, that, you know, connects with anyone to imagine what that might have been like.
And most of them can take you right to that moment, and that's really what's amazing about your films. I guess, you know, when we think about this uncomfortableness you talked about, that plays out almost like the mushroom cloud itself from the bomb. People's sense of shame and uncomfortableness about even talking about Hiroshima and Nagasaki. What is the shame in Japan for talking about being a victim of Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Where does it come from, and how?
I think for the Japanese, it's one, there's just the cultural fact of talking about yourself or eliciting sympathy is really looked down upon. It's just not something that people are used to doing. But I think that Japanese in general have an attitude about tragedy that, you know, you just have to take it in and move on. And so I think culturally it's viewed as sort of, you know, whining to talk about something that happened. And, you know, I think that there was also the survivors after the bombing were immediately sort of put in this untouchable status where people, you know, initially were afraid that the radiation diseases might be contagious, and they were, you know, often discriminated against in jobs and in marriage. I mean, still, you'll hear people even now talk about, you know, with pride that they went against their family to marry
right. An
atomic survivor's child or grandchild even. And, you know, I think that there's still stigma. I think that takes a certain kind of person to be willing, and generally those are, I think the people in the film have a sense of mission, that this is part of honoring the people that died, and that they're unique, and that they're the only people that experienced and survived
a nuclear attack.
Nuclear attack.
Well, Stephen, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Oh, thank you, John.
Stephen Okazaki is the Academy Award-winning filmmaker responsible for Mushroom Club and White Light, Black Rain, both about the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You're listening to the Peace Bell, which rang today at the precise time that bomb was dropped in Hiroshima. For the first time, the United States attended the ceremony making the nuclear attack on Hiroshima 65 years ago. An ambassador participated for the very first time. Also attending for the first time, the ambassadors of Britain and France, and also the United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people, by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.